He looks out over the sea of slowly bobbing heads, imagines his boys in 20 years' time, with thinning hair, beer guts, photos in their wallets of children of their own. Is everyone in the world at the same game, trying to pass himself off as something he is not? Could the dark truth be that the system is composed of individual units, none of whom really knows what he is doing, who emerge from school and slide into the templates offered to them by accident of birth? Banker, doctor, hotelier, salesman. Just as tonight they'd separated according to prearranged, invisible symmetries. Nerds and jocks, skanks and studs.
Penny Farum.
A female voice speaks directly into his ear. He jumps. Miss McIntyre smiles at him.
How are you getting on?
Fine.
He recovers.
Bored.
Who was that banging on the door?
Carl Cullen. He wanted to come in.
You didn't let him?
He was either drunk or on something.
Howard responds laconically.
Anyway, he knew what time the doors closed.
I'm glad it wasn't me who had to speak to him.
She says, in a rare tone of respect.
Yeah, well.
He shrugs it off.
What have you got there?
I raided the girls' toilets.
She holds up 2 carrier bags crammed with clinking bottles.
You should have seen their little faces.
Did you kick them out?
No, I felt sorry for them. 'Twas bad luck. I'd just gone down to use the loo.
She sets the bags down on the table and rummages through them.
Look at all this stuff. I feel like Elliot Ness.
She raises her head again.
So what were you thinking about?
Thinking?
Howard repeats, as if the word is unfamiliar.
Just now you were way off somewhere.
I was wondering why the DJ is playing all these old songs.
You looked sad.
She lays a finger on his chest and gazes at it, like an electrician into a nest of wiring.
I bet,
she says slowly,
you were thinking of the dances you went to when you were young, and wondering where all the time went, and what happened to all the dreams you had then, as if this life is anything like the one you wanted.
Howard laughs.
Bingo.
Me too,
she says ruefully.
I suppose it's inevitable.
She turns her gaze over the hall, where 2-personed silhouettes are swaying almost motionlessly to Wild Horses by the Rolling Stones.
So how did you do? At your hop?
What do you mean?
Howard, eventually this playing dumb routine is going to stop seeming charming. Did you score? Did you dance the slow set? Or were you one of the losers watching from the sidelines?
Howard considers lying, then comes clean.
Loser,
he says.
Same here.
She nods dolefully. Howard rounds on her in disbelief.
You? You're telling me no one wanted to kiss you?
What can I say? I was your classic ugly duckling.
She looks away.
So do you feel like making up for lost time?
What?
She shrugs, inclines her head towards the crowd.
I don't know. Take home one of those little nymphets. I'm sure they'd love some extra lessons from a handsome teacher. They're all so gorgeous, aren't they? And skinny. God, none of them must have eaten for a week.
They're a little young for me.
Take 2. 14 plus 14 is 28.
I have a girlfriend who might object.
That's a shame.
She says ambiguously. She clams up, addresses herself to the music, leaving Howard to wonder just what has passed him by.
This is such a great song,
she remarks. And then, forthrightly, to Howard,
would you like to dance?
Only by a miracle does Howard manage not to drop his paper cup of punch.
Here? Now? With you?
She arches a gamine eyebrow. Howard's mind is a sea of flying chicken feathers.
We can't,
he stammers. Then adds hurriedly,
it's not that I don't want to, but, you know, in front of the kids and everything.
Then let's sneak out.
Out?
He repeats.
Somewhere no one will see us. For 5 minutes.
Her eyes glitter at him like mirror balls.
But what about the... Didn't Greg say...
He gestures weakly at the costumed teenagers.
5 minutes, Howard. What's the worst that can happen? Just at the end of this song, it's practically over anyway. We'll just go out into the corridor. Oh, we can make cosmopolitans.
She views his expression of agonized vacillation, cringing at her like an animal begging to be put out of its misery, and takes his hand.
You owe it to yourself, Howard,
she says.
You have to dance at least one slow set in your life.
The lights are low, and he doesn't think anyone sees them leave. Wild Horses fades into R.E.M.'s Everybody Hurts, extending the mass kissing for another 3 minutes. To a dark corner where a boy in a red Formula One outfit is welded to the mouth of a sexy secretary. A girl in a dress unfortunately resembling an exploding wedding cake totters up. In a trembling voice she says,
Titch!
Formula One ignores her. She waits a moment, unsure, then taps him on the back.
Titch!
He breaks off and turns round, exasperated. Sexy secretary, looking daggers at wedding cake, wipes a damp chin with her sleeve.
Titch, we need to talk,
wedding cake says. Elsewhere, a 30s gangster with a pencil mustache adorning her upper lip approaches a sexy GI and a princess.
Hey, Allison. Oh, my God. Sorry, Janine. You look just like Allison from behind.
That's okay, Fiona. I think Allison's over there with Max Brady.
Thanks.
30s gangster moves off. Sexy GI's smile vanishes instantly, and she says to the princess,
That bitch! There's no way I look like fucking Allison Cummins from behind. Her arse is like 3 times the size of mine.
Fiona looks like a lesbian in that suit,
the princess says.
She's such a stupid cunt.
The princess, the GI, the scuba diver, and the Victorian lady who looks like a wedding cake knew it would be dodgy trying to sneak drink inside, so they had 3 breezers and a naggin of vodka each before they came in. Well, no one actually finished the naggin, except Victorian lady. And then she kept falling over on the way up here, and they practically had to carry her past the pervy old priest. Still, the princess is quite locked, and the GI is even more locked. In the car park she took 2 of the pills, and now she's talking really fast and loud and not making that much sense.
Looks like Kellyanne's finally hunted down Titch,
the princess says, looking at the scene unfolding in the corner.
Oh my God, she's not going to tell him now,
the scuba diver says.
What does she think he's going to do? Stop kissing Amory Fox and get down on one knee right here in the fucking Seabrook Gym Hall and say, Oh, Kellyanne, please marry me. I mean, hello.
He's quite good looking,
the princess judges.
He's nothing special,
the GI says dismissively.
He's a boy, you know.
A strong man with a handlebar mustache and leopard skin leotard interposes himself between the girls and glances from one to the other. Smiling. They gaze back at him with expressions of naked disgust, of the kind ordinarily reserved for, say, sex offenders. The strong man withdraws, looking significantly less strong.
God, I'm so sick of these fucking boys,
the GI declares.
I need a man.
Me too,
the princess says.
Oh, Jesus. Laurie, don't look, but that weird fucking Robin Hood thing is completely staring at you again,
the scuba diver says.
Oh my God, what is his problem?
Maybe I should go over and tell him to stop freaking you out.
Don't waste the oxygen.
Did you hear anything from Prince Charming?
The GI asks. The princess's face falls.
Oh, Laurie.
The GI reaches out and lays a hand on the princess's shoulder.
Don't let him ruin your night. Switch off your phone and stop thinking about him.
I'm not thinking about him,
the princess mumbles, hair falling over her face.
I suppose he at least might have had some drugs,
the GI says.
God, this thing is so fucking boring. Seabrook boys are such invertebrates.
She withdraws her hand, wraps her bare arms around herself.
I need a shag so badly.
Near the heart of the dance floor, Niall slash Trudy has been arrested on his way back from the toilets by a heart-stoppingly lovely girl dressed as Natasha Fatale, arch-enemy of Bullwinkle the Moose. The girl wants to know where he got his lipstick. Niall, sweating profusely, is not sure how to proceed. Should he tell her he got it from his sister and he doesn't know the name? Or should he tell her the truth, that he fell in love with it in a little boutique in Sandy Cove Village? The heart-stopping girl waits expectantly. Niall feels one of his breasts slide inexorably out of his corset. Dennis and Skippy, meanwhile, are over by the punch bowl watching Ruprecht, who has somehow got talking to a girl.
Is he the guy from The Karate Kid?
The girl is shouting over the music.
He's Professor Emeritus of Physics at Stanford!
Ruprecht shouts back. The girl looks utterly lost for a reply. After a few moments, she simply gives up and walks away. Ruprecht, who initiated the conversation only because the girl, dressed as a saucy waitress, was carrying a chocolate cake, which turned out to be fake, is unfazed, and rejoins the others just as Mario trudges over with a grim expression.
How's it going, Mario?
Dennis asks innocently.
Fuck these school-going girls.
Mario makes a dismissive gesture.
In Italy, I prefer to date the girls who are in college. Those who are 19, 20, and have a good knowledge of sexual techniques. These girls who are repressed and frigid do not know which way is up.
They don't know much about science either,
Ruprecht adds.
Also, what is with this music from days of yore that is badly cramping my style?
Mario is not the only one asking. Over in the DJ booth, Wallace Willis has just segued from Led Zeppelin into All Right Now, and is so engrossed in Paul Kossoff's classic riff that at first he pays no attention to the irate voices emanating from somewhere below.
Yo, cracker! Hey, honky! Yo, you just gonna ignore me!
Finally, he realizes that the voices are addressing him, and peers over the side of the booth to see two smallish, disputatious-looking boys in trousers the size of refrigerators making inscrutable hand gestures at him.
That's right, nigger. We be talking to you.
Dang, G, what up with this music y'all playing?
Wallace, who's dressed in a pristine white sailor suit and holding an enormous lollipop, slides off his headphones.
What?
He says.
Nigger, this be the shit my dad listens to.
One of them says.
Yeah, Holmes, what is it? 100 greatest jeans commercials?
The other adds, waving a plastic machine gun at him.
This is free,
he informs them.
Gee, I don't care if it costs you $50 fucking. Put on something with bass.
Yeah, motherfucker, this ain't your Aunt Mabel's birthday party. Play some hip-hop, dog.
No requests,
Wallace says.
You're making a mistake,
one of the voices warns.
The acting principal asked me to be the DJ,
Wallace replies primly, and replaces the headphones over his ears. The two bad-tempered gangsters, both of whom are, incontestably and in spite of their best efforts, white, lower at him a moment longer, and then abruptly disappear. Midway through the next song, Hold the Line, by Toto, the sound cuts out. The crowd shuffles to a halt, and the hall is filled with a frazzle of consternation. It can't be the storm that's to blame this time, because the turntables are still lit up, and the disco lights still skirling over the now static heads. There must be a connection loose somewhere. Wallace Willis casts about for grown-up assistance, but can't seem to locate Mr. Fallon and Miss McIntyre. He unlatches the half-door to his booth, descends the steps, and is stooping to examine the jumble of cables beneath it when the music starts up again. Everybody cheers and resumes dancing. But the song that is playing now is not the song that was playing a moment ago. In fact, it is not a song that features in Wallace's music collection at all.
Wait!
He shouts.
Stop dancing! This is the wrong song! This is the wrong song!
But nobody appears to hear him. They are too busy throwing gangsterish shapes and shaking their booty to the interloping song's extremely loud bass line. Bass. It's only now that Wallace realizes what has happened. This is not a programming error, or a crossed wire, or a freak occurrence brought about by the storm. His sound system has been hijacked by the boys with the giant trousers. I'm a case of champagne and she's falled off the wagon. I'm slaying the whole like St. George slayed the dragon.